Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi, Herman and Quirin. So we've talked in a few episodes now about air quality. I became acquainted with air quality, what it means and the different parameters just over the last couple of years, being an asthmatic, but more pertinently, these forest fires I mentioned that we have around Jerusalem. And they've been a feature of the summer for the past number of years, and you can literally smell something burning in the air in your apartment. So before, as I said previously, before you even turn on Google News, you can sometimes tell there's been a forest fire, and we had some really, really devastating ones. During those times, whether you have asthma or some other respiratory condition, that's when you start thinking about air quality, and I guess you wonder, well, is it safe? So learning about that, I guess I've been more interested in learning about air quality outside of those moments of crisis when it's in the news, and what our average baseline is. So I was looking into adding it to Home Assistant, the home automation platform, and it's pretty easy to do. To give credit to to Israel, I often say that the digital government here is really excellent. A global network of governments actually pooled together their data about air quality under an initiative called the World Air Quality Index. And I'm looking at an app at the moment on my phone called Air Visual. And Misrad Hasviva, the Israeli Ministry for the Protection of the Environment, is listed here as a government contributor. So they're actually supplying data directly into the app. Now, that's where the good news of air quality in Israel stops, unfortunately. And looking here at our AQI in Jerusalem today, it's estimated to be 51, which the app calls moderate. And I'm looking at the the retrospective history today. Are we jumping into crazy, crazy numbers, actually? It's forecast to. But let me get some actual data here from one of the monitoring stations. This one is at the Jerusalem bus station. So that's the AQI, but the AQI, of course, is a composite index. The actual pollutants here, PM2.5 is at 7.8 nanograms per cubic meter. That's listed as good. Carbon monoxide at 572, also listed as good. Nitrogen dioxide at 54. And actually what's tipping it up is the ozone, which is 124 nanograms per cubic meters, and that's got the orange sign onto it. Some days, the picture is quite different. When we had those forest fires, the PM2.5 and PM10 values were really, really up there, but they're quite settled down today. But if I go into, if I compare those numbers, and I'm looking now at the cities in Israel, at the AQI index, Jerusalem 51, Tel Aviv 70, Haifa 60, Ramat Gan 114. Only two cities in this list of cities in Israel, Pardes Chana and Givatayim, are actually labeled green. Ramat Gan is the worst in the country currently. Now, if I search for, in this app, Cork, where I grew up, Cork in Ireland, it's green, 35, and everything in Munster in Ireland, from Mallow to UCC, is all green. Cork's 35 at the moment. It has PM2.5 and PM10 are 2.7 and 11.9 respectively, and sulfur dioxide. So you've got some more parameters here, but everything is looking good. Now here's where I think it gets interesting, and I'm just punching names into this app here. London, UK, which you think of as a pollution hotspot, 23 AQI, main pollutant PM2.5, but the PM2.5 is only 4.2 nanograms per cubic meter. And let me just try one more before everyone falls asleep, if anyone listens to this podcast. New York, as in NYC, I'm sure there's many stations here, but looking at one of them anyway, 53, and the forecast for today is actually for 49. They have only two pollutants given here in this app, And it's PM2.5 at 10.1 that's pushing it up. So the picture, generally speaking, in Israel is that, looking, you can go over to India and China and see some really crazy values. But the picture that, as I saw it, and looking at this data over different days, is that if you look at Europe, if you look at the US, most major cities actually have better air quality than we do in Israel. And it's not just a Jerusalem thing or a Tel Aviv thing. It's pretty much the same picture across Israel, with the exception of some minor green belts. But it's a very developed country. And it seems to be actually quite a perennial thing. If you look in summer, you're going to see the same general picture, that air pollution is significantly worse than in London, New York, Dallas, where my wife is from, and Cork, where I grew up. So my question is this: it's quite a concerning finding, because although it might sound a bit pedantic to those who don't have things like asthma, it goes way beyond asthma. Air quality is literally, we breathe it in every day, and it's linked to, I think it said on the app there, 1 in 9 deaths or something is linked directly to air quality. So it goes beyond cardiovascular disease. There's causal links between air quality and a whole bunch of really bad things that are killing people early. So it's one of those issues that I think it's a crying shame that it's not more on the national agenda. So all this was a way of saying that I've been following the air quality data in Israel for about a year or two now, and I see a consistently bad picture. So why is this? Israel is a high-tech economy, but very, very modern, and you think that there is enough interest in this topic that the government is actually feeding in data to these apps, even if it's not the most flattering data. Why do we see these values that air quality in the center of Jerusalem is currently worse than it is in the center of London and other world cities? What are we doing wrong to get these kind of values? And of course, really what I'm asking is, what can we do right to try shift it in the other direction? Herman and Corin, let's talk about the air quality here in Israel. Why are the parameters the way they are? Is this a new problem, an old problem? And those of us who feel passionate about this issue, that we really should be paying more attention to the air that we breathe and doing more to clean it up, what do you think we can do to put pressure on governments? I saw that you can become a contributor to the Air Quality Network, which sounded great. I'd be more than happy to stick a sensor outside our balcony, but you have to pay something like $400 to get an outdoor station, which is a bit beyond our very strained budget at the moment. If I did want to begin contributing air quality data to a government project to be part of the change and part of the monitoring and add another data point, is there any way to do it that isn't quite so pricey, or do I just need to save up a bit to get a good air quality kit? Herman and Corin, let's talk about air quality in today's episode of My Weird Prompts.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Corin, and I am sitting here on our balcony in Jerusalem, looking out over the hills. It is actually a relatively clear day today, but that is not always the case.
It definitely is not. I am Herman Poppleberry, and I have spent the last few hours diving into the data Daniel sent over. Our housemate Daniel has been tracking air quality for a year now, and his findings are honestly a bit sobering. He noticed that the air quality here in Israel, particularly in Jerusalem and Tel Aviv, is consistently worse than what you see in cities like London, New York, or even Cork in Ireland.
It is a striking comparison. When you think of London, you often think of the historical pea superfogs or the modern congestion, but the data suggests we are actually breathing in more particulate matter here on a regular basis. Daniel was asking why this is the case, especially since Israel is a highly developed high-tech economy. You would think we would have this under control.
You would think so, but it is a complex mix of geography, meteorology, and urban planning, or, in some cases, a lack of urban planning. We have actually touched on related issues before, like in episode 320 when we talked about indoor air quality and mold, and episode 398 where we looked at the rental market and respiratory hazards. But today, we are going outside. We are talking about the very air that fills our lungs every time we step out the front door.
So let us start with the big picture. When Daniel looks at his app and sees an air quality index of 60 or 70 in Tel Aviv, while London is sitting at 25, what are we actually looking at? What are the primary pollutants we are dealing with here?
The main culprit we talk about in Israel is particulate matter, specifically PM 2.5 and PM 10. These are tiny particles, 2.5 micrometers or 10 micrometers in diameter. To give you an idea, a human hair is about 70 micrometers wide, so these things are incredibly small. PM 2.5 is particularly nasty because it is small enough to travel deep into the lungs and even enter the bloodstream.
And Daniel mentioned he is an asthmatic, so he is feeling this more acutely than most. But even for those of us without underlying conditions, the long-term exposure is a serious health risk. Why is the concentration so much higher here? Is it just because we have a lot of cars?
Cars are a huge part of it. But before we blame the traffic, we have to look at the dust. We live in a region surrounded by deserts. We have the Sahara to our west and the Arabian Desert to our east. During certain times of the year, especially in the spring and autumn, we get these weather patterns called the Shirav or Khamsin. These are hot, dry winds that carry massive amounts of mineral dust.
Right. I remember those days. The sky turns this eerie yellowish-orange color, and you can literally feel the grit in your teeth if you walk outside. But that is a natural phenomenon. Is that the primary reason the average is higher? Or is there a baseline level of human-made pollution that is also worse?
It is both. The natural dust gives us a higher baseline of PM10, but the human-made stuff, the PM2.5 from vehicle emissions and industry, is where the real danger lies. Israel has one of the highest vehicle densities in the developed world. Not necessarily the most cars per person, but the most cars per kilometer of road. Our roads are incredibly congested, and because our population is concentrated in a very small geographic area, mainly the coastal plain and the Jerusalem corridor, all that exhaust is concentrated too.
That is an interesting distinction. The density of the cars on the actual road surface. And when you combine that with our topography, it gets even worse, right? I know Tel Aviv has issues with humidity-trapping pollutants, and here in Jerusalem, we are in a bowl surrounded by mountains.
Exactly. We often experience something called a temperature inversion. Normally, air gets cooler as you go higher up, but sometimes a layer of warm air sits on top of a layer of cooler air near the ground. This acts like a lid on a pot, trapping all the car exhaust, construction dust, and industrial emissions right where we are breathing. In Tel Aviv, the high humidity also plays a role. Moisture can bond with pollutants like nitrogen dioxide and sulfur dioxide, creating a sort of chemical soup that just hangs in the air.
It is frustrating because when you look at a city like London, they've been very aggressive about this. They have the Ultra-Low Emission Zone, or ULEZ, which charges older, more polluting vehicles to enter the city. They have pivoted heavily toward electric buses and cycling infrastructure. Why does it feel like we are lagging so far behind?
Well, we do have a Clean Air Act. It was passed in 2008 and went into effect in 2011. It gave the Ministry of Environmental Protection a lot of power to regulate industry and vehicles. And to be fair, we have seen some improvements. We moved our power plants from coal to natural gas, which significantly reduced sulfur dioxide emissions. But the transport sector is the white whale. Our public transit system, while improving with the new light rail lines in Tel Aviv and the expansion here in Jerusalem, is still decades behind European standards.
And that is the crux of it, isn't it? If the public transit is not reliable or extensive enough, people stick to their cars. And more cars mean more. PM 2.5. I also wonder about construction. It feels like every second street in Jerusalem and Tel Aviv is a construction site.
It practically is. Israel is growing incredibly fast. That construction creates a lot of coarse dust, which contributes to those PM10 levels. But it also means more heavy trucks on the road, which are often older diesel vehicles that spew out fine particulates. If you compare that to a city like Cork, which Daniel mentioned, you have a much smaller population, less construction density, and a coastal breeze that is much more effective at clearing out pollutants than the Mediterranean breeze is for us.
So, we have geography working against us with the desert dust and inversions, and we have policy working against us with high vehicle density and slow public transit growth. Daniel also asked, what can be done to put pressure on the government to act? This feels like one of those issues where everyone agrees it is bad, but nothing moves fast enough.
It requires a multi-pronged approach. First, there is the legal route. organizations like Adam Teva Vadin, which is the Israel Union for Environmental Defense, do incredible work. They use the Clean Air Act to sue the government and large polluters when they fail to meet standards. Supporting these NGOs is one of the most effective ways to exert pressure.
What about data transparency? Daniel is looking at these apps, but how much of that data is actually coming from official sources, and how much is being used to hold officials accountable?
That is a great point. The Ministry of Environmental Protection operates a network of monitoring stations. You can actually go to their website and see real-time data. But the problem is the density of those stations. They might have one station for an entire neighborhood. Pollution can vary significantly from one street to the next, especially if one street is a major bus artery and the other is a quiet side street. This is where the community science aspect comes in, which Daniel also asked about.
Right. He mentioned that contributing to these networks often requires buying expensive equipment. He saw sensors that cost $400, which is a lot of money. Are there cheaper ways for people to get involved?
There absolutely are. The $400 price tag usually refers to high-end, pre-assembled outdoor units like the Purple Air sensors. Those are fantastic because they are very accurate and they automatically upload data to a global map. But if you are willing to get a little bit technical, you can build your own for a fraction of that cost.
Now you are speaking Herman's language. Tell me about the DIY approach.
There is a project called Luftdaten, which started in Germany. It is now part of a larger initiative called Sensor.Community. They provide instructions on how to build a sensor using off-the-shelf components. You need a small microcontroller, like an ESP8266, which costs about $5 or $10. Then you need a particulate matter sensor, like the SDS011, which is about $20 to $30. Add a temperature and humidity sensor for another $5, some plastic piping to keep it dry, and you have a functional, high-quality air monitor for under $50.
Under $50 sounds much more manageable than $400. But how hard is it to put together? Do you need to be an electrical engineer?
Not at all. There is no soldering required if you use jumper wires. It is basically like building a Lego set for electronics. You plug the wires into the right pins, flash the firmware onto the controller using a USB cable, and it connects to your home Wi-Fi. It then sends data every few minutes to the global map.
That is incredible. And if we had hundreds of these scattered across Jerusalem instead of just a handful of government stations, we would have a much clearer picture of where the hotspots are.
Exactly. And that data is powerful. Imagine being able to go to a city council meeting and saying, look, here is the data from 20 different sensors along this specific street. The PM 2.5 levels are consistently 3 times higher than the World Health Organization guidelines. That is much harder for a politician to ignore than a general complaint about the air feeling dusty.
It is about creating a localized evidence base. We actually talked about the enforcement gap in episode 115 when we discussed tobacco policy. It is one thing to have a law on the books, but it is another thing entirely to have the data and the public pressure to ensure that law is actually being enforced.
That is a perfect parallel. The Clean Air Act has the teeth, but the government often lacks the political will to bite, especially when it comes to restricting car use or imposing heavy fines on industrial zones like the one in Haifa. The Haifa Bay Area is a notorious example. It is a massive industrial hub right next to a major population center. Residents there have been fighting for years to close down the oil refineries because of the documented health impacts.
And that brings us back to what people can do. Beyond building sensors, what are the policy changes we should be shouting for? If we want to catch up to London or New York, what are the big wins?
Low-emission zones are the low-hanging fruit. Jerusalem has actually started a small low-emission zone in the city center, but it is very limited in scope. We need to expand those zones to cover entire metropolitan areas and make the standards much stricter. We also need to talk about the scrap page programs. In many countries, the government will pay you to trade in your old polluting diesel car for an electric one or for a public transit pass. We have had small versions of this in Israel, but they are often underfunded and poorly publicized.
It also feels like we need a massive cultural shift in how we view transportation. We are so car dependent here. Part of that is the geography and the lack of trains, but part of it is also status and convenience.
It is, but convenience is a product of infrastructure. If you look at Tel Aviv right now, the construction of the light rail is a nightmare, but once that entire network is finished, the calculation for a commuter changes. If you can get from Petah Tikva to the center of Tel Aviv in 20 minutes on a train versus an hour in traffic, people will switch. The pressure needs to be on accelerating those projects. We cannot have a light rail line take 20 years to complete.
And in the meantime, what can an individual do to protect themselves? Daniel is an asthmatic. He is tracking the data. He is seeing the bad numbers. Besides staying indoors with the window shut, what are the practical takeaways?
Well, as we discussed in episode 320, a high-quality HEPA filter in your home can make a massive difference. It can strip out those PM2.5 particles that leak in from outside. But for being outdoors, it is about timing. Pollution levels usually peak during the morning and evening rush hours. If you are going for a run or taking the kids to the park, trying to avoid those windows can significantly reduce your exposure.
Also, the location within the city matters. Even a block or two away from a major road, the concentration of particulates drops off significantly. If you have the option to walk through a residential neighborhood rather than along a main artery, take it.
Definitely, and use the apps. Daniel mentioned AirVisual, which is great. There is also Breezometer, which was actually an Israeli startup that Google acquired. They use sophisticated algorithms to give you street-level air quality data. If you see the numbers are in the red, that is the day to skip the outdoor workout or wear a mask if you have to be near traffic.
It is funny you mention the masks. We all got used to them during the pandemic, and for a while, people were realizing that an N95 mask is actually very effective at filtering out air pollution too. In cities like Seoul or Beijing, it is completely normal to see people wearing masks on high pollution days. We haven't quite adopted that culture here yet.
No, we haven't, but maybe we should, especially for vulnerable populations. But I want to go back to Daniel's point about the government. One of the most powerful things you can do is participate in the public comment periods for new infrastructure projects. When a new highway is proposed or a new power plant is being discussed, there is a legal requirement for public consultation. Often, only the lobbyists show up. If hundreds of citizens show up with air quality data and health concerns, it changes the conversation.
It is about showing that there is a political cost to ignoring the air we breathe. I think people often feel powerless against something as abstract as air quality, but it is actually very local. It is the bus idling at the corner of your street. It is the construction site next door that isn't using water to suppress dust. These are things you can report to the municipal authorities.
Right. Most municipalities have a hotline, the 106 number here in Israel. If you see a truck spewing black smoke or a construction site creating a dust cloud, call it in. The more reports they get, the more they are forced to send inspectors out. It is about being a nuisance for the sake of public health.
I like that. Being a nuisance for public health. It is also worth mentioning that Israel is a signatory to various international climate and environmental agreements. We are supposed to be reducing our carbon footprint, and a lot of the actions that reduce carbon also reduce local air pollution. Switching to electric vehicles, for example, solves two problems at once.
It does, but we have to be careful about where the electricity comes from. If we all switch to electric cars but we are still burning gas or coal to generate that electricity, we are just moving the pollution from the tailpipe to the smokestack. Luckily, Israel is making strides in solar, though again, not as fast as we could be given how much sun we have.
It is the classic Israeli paradox. We have the technology. We have the sunshine. We have the smart people like Daniel who are tracking the data. But the implementation is often bogged down in bureaucracy and short-term thinking.
Exactly. But I am hopeful. The fact that people like Daniel are even paying attention to this is a huge shift. 20 years ago, nobody in Israel knew what AQI stood for. Now, it is a standard feature on weather apps. That awareness is the first step toward change.
So, to summarize for Daniel and for everyone else listening, why is the air quality worse here? It is a combination of natural desert dust, high vehicle density on a limited road network, and geographic features that trap pollution. What can be done? Support environmental NGOs. Use the legal system. Pressure local government for better public transit and low emission zones. And report local violations.
And if you want to contribute to the data, do not feel like you have to spend $400. Go to sensor.community, look up the Luftdaten instructions, and build your own for $50. It is a fun weekend project, and it provides real, actionable data that helps everyone breathe a little easier.
I think I might actually build one of those this weekend, Herman. We can stick it out on the balcony and see how our air compares to the official station down the road.
I was hoping you would say that. I already have a spare microcontroller in my desk. We just need to order the sensor.
Perfect. Well, this has been a fascinating deep dive. It is an issue that literally affects every single person living in this region, and yet it doesn't get nearly enough headlines unless there is a massive dust storm.
That is the thing about air pollution. It is often invisible, but its effects are very real. From asthma to cardiovascular disease, the health costs are enormous. Treating it as a public health crisis rather than just an environmental inconvenience is key.
Well said. And hey, if you are enjoying the show and finding these discussions helpful, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on your podcast app or on Spotify. It genuinely helps other people find the show and join the conversation.
It really does. And thank you to Daniel for sending in this prompt. It is something we have been talking about around the dinner table for a while, and it was great to finally dig into the details.
Absolutely. You can find more information about this episode and all our past episodes, including those ones on mold and tobacco policy we mentioned, at our website, myweirdprompts.com. We have a full archive there, and a way for you to get in touch if you have a prompt of your own.
Thanks for listening, everyone. This has been My Weird Prompts.
Until next time, take a deep breath and maybe check your app first. Bye for now.
Bye to everyone.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.